This is Limitless Possibility. I'm Yannick Magnan.
And I'm Luc-Olivier Dumeblet.
And our topic this week is...
stuff we are eagerly waiting for 2015.
Okay, so let's start with some follow-up. This week, the follow-up is all from me. So on the streaming services episode, we mentioned PlayStation Now briefly, which is a rental service for video games. Except now it's not just rentals anymore. You can actually... starting today, pay a flat fee. I believe it's $20 per month, which is a little steep. And you get to play up to 100 games unlimited on PlayStation Now during that month, which is interesting. A little caveat is that the list of games you can play in the subscription service are not the same as PlayStation Now rental games, which is a little weird, but rights holders, you know. So that's a new development today.
Yeah, and all of this is available if you're able to log in into your PSN account.
Right, which right now is having a little bit of issues.
Yes.
Next up, on the free-to-play front, there has been a lot of interesting news in the last 2 weeks about this, which is a nice coincidence. Asahi Shimbun, which is a newspaper in Japan, published the results of a study from Sega Network's free-to-play games over the last 3 months. And they found 30% of free-to-play game players actually pay money. And this is the big stat that's very interesting. Of those who do spend, on average, they spend $21 a month. Which means that if you can actually reel in those users for quite a few months, you can get more than retail price for your game, which adds up to a lot of money.
It seems to me that you're able to get, like... a third of a retail price game per month, per user that pays, which is kind of good.
Yeah, and if you consider that a lot of free-to-play games are built very like on the cheap or optimized for low-cost operation, then it actually turns out to work very well for them. So that's one of the things that happened. The other thing in the free-to-play game thing, we talked about Puzzle & Dragons last week, and a surprise announcement... Puzzle & Dragons Super Mario Edition was announced last week or the week before, I forget which. So Gung Ho and Nintendo are teaming up. This appears to be a reskin of the... there was a 3DS game based on Puzzle & Dragons called Puzzle & Dragons Z. And basically they reskinned it with Super Mario characters and made it a little more approachable for younger players. And that is going to be coming out in April in Japan... on the 3DS, which is going to make a ton of money because Puzzle & Dragons is really, really, really popular with adults and Super Mario is really, really popular with little kids. So now they get to reach a whole new audience this way. It is a paid up front game. On the other hand, it is not a free to play game, but it is a way to hook kids into that kind of gameplay so that when they grow up, if Puzzle & Dragons is still around, when they're old enough to be playing free to play games, well, they can get into that whole thing.
Or the next installment of Puzzle & Dragons from that same company.
Yeah, well, free-to-play games are sort of weird in that they don't really have sequels. It's just big patches.
I'm not speaking about sequel. I'm speaking just about another game that is free-to-play from the same company.
Yeah, they don't... well, at least as far as Puzzle & Dragons is concerned, they don't really seem to do much cross-promotion, which is surprising, but we'll see. You may have noticed... Oh, go ahead.
Before we continue, do you know if it will be available here? Because you said Japan, but is it Japan only?
I don't know if it'll be released in April everywhere, but I believe it was announced also for Europe, which is strange.
Okay, so it seems to be everybody except North America.
There is a Nintendo Direct tomorrow at the time we're recording this, which may actually announce this game formally for the rest of the world, so we don't know. People who are listening to this on Sunday, maybe you know. Hello from the past. You may have noticed that our website broke for a little while this week, and it wasn't Luc-Olivier's fault this time.
Yay! That was not my fault! Yay!
And I'm only taking time to talk about this because of a really stupid anecdote. So the reason it broke is because our host decided to upgrade us to a new version of the operating system because we were far behind and we hadn't upgraded ourselves. And, well, we got a new version to PHP, and what happened, and yes, I know, PHP, lol, but what happened is something open source license related, and of course, I would never turn down an opportunity to make fun of open source licenses. So the JSON license allows any use of the software for JSON as long as it is not for evil. And we use JSON for a lot of things because, seriously, we don't want to write XML. It sucks.
It does.
But the definition of free software doesn't discriminate between good or evil usage because, obviously, freedom is freedom. So because of this, the JSON PHP module that we were using and that is included with the standard PHP distribution is not considered free software. So a bunch of Linux distributions and apparently FreeBSD pulled it for that reason, leading to our crash because we were upgraded to the new version of PHP. And all I have to say about this is it's really freaking dumb and it shouldn't have happened. Now, there are two people to blame for this. There is the JSON guy, which put that in the license because you can't enforce it, really. And evil is open to the interpretation of the person installing the software, which means that if, like, North Korea installs it and then they decide that what they are doing is great, then they don't seem to have any problem with it. And the other person to blame is the neckbeards who work in the free software world who... just like for stupid things like this, we get packages removed from distributions and have to figure out workarounds, and it's a pain in the ass. So
Just saying, by the way, Stallman is running towards your house right now.
Good thing he'll fall into our bear traps. Next up, today I fixed one of my dad's issues with his iPhone, and it reminded me of when we were talking about the opaqueness of Apple's systems. So my dad's call history just randomly broke when he upgraded to iOS 8. The badge inside the phone app said that his history had -1 missed calls, and the table view inside of the recents tab just didn't load any data. And so I had to go fix it. But how do you fix that?
Let me guess. You restored from a new backup.
Well, that's sort of the issue. Well, no, actually, that wouldn't have worked. Because it would have restored the corrupted database.
So, no, let me say from a new backup. So from a freshly created backup.
Well, you mean no backup, right?
Yeah.
But then my dad would lose all his data, and that would not be very fun. And it's still a problem in 2015 that, like, you can't just restore app data and let the phone system software data to have separately. Or you can't just do, like, uninstall a game and then have the game data saved somewhere and then just restore that data when you reinstall the game. It's sort of surprising that there isn't that kind of management built into, seriously, either Android or iOS. So what I had to do is actually jailbreak his phone, which good thing there's a jailbreak, and go SSH in to the place where the call history library is and delete those files and reboot the phone, and then the phone would generate new call history database file, and then everything is okay. But of course, if this happened to a person without a jailbreaker in their family, how the hell do they fix this? Who the hell knows? It sort of reminds me a lot of, as I mentioned on our previous episode, album art cache corruption, which is hell.
Yeah, it seems to me that if you don't have access to jailbreaking, it's a trip to the Apple Store, and the Apple Store genius will tell you, restore from a fresh install, and that's it.
I believe it might actually be possible through something like iExplorer or one of those software packages to actually go in and modify it, but I'm not entirely certain since I don't remember if those give you access to the entire mobile home directory or only mobile media.
If I recall correctly, those kinds of software have access, but maybe they only have read access.
Well, I think they have read-write access, except it's just a restricted part. And since most of my devices are jailbroken, well, I get access to the full file system. So I'm unclear as to, like, what parts of the system I could have modified without a jailbroken device. But that's pretty much it for now. So let's go into the main topic.
Yep. So this week we'll talk about stuff we're eagerly waiting for 2015. And I think Yannick and I have a list of stuff to speak about. But first, we want to start with the subject that is both common to our list. And the first one is related to episode 2 of this podcast, and it's Apple Pay.
Right, Apple Pay, which is rumored to be coming to Canada in March.
Yay!
I can't wait to go make the people, the cashiers at the grocery store next to my house just freak out when they see me use my phone.
I'm sure they won't care, because I'm sure they are still used to people doing that with their credit card compared to, for example, compared to the U.S., for example.
I don't think so, because my neighborhood is a bunch of old people who don't have cards.
Ah, maybe.
So that was a short topic.
Yeah, that was a short
because
one.
Because that's pretty much all we have to say about it, because everything else has been covered in episode 2.
Exactly. Next one is, obviously, the Apple Watch. And let me take a look at the list. Yeah, it seems to me that might be most of the Apple stuff is part of my subject and of the common list. I think Yannick's list is Apple
Well, you can't
free.
See it.
Yeah, I'm guessing it's Apple free.
No, there's some Apple.
Oh, okay. Good.
What I have to say about Apple Watch is STFU and take my money.
Next.
No, actually, I have more stuff to say.
No, we do have more stuff to say, but that's the main feeling that I have related to Apple Watch too. But
so what's your feeling on the usability, not usability, but the usefulness of wearable devices?
That's a good one, because for a while I borrowed your Pebble and I use it at least for a month, maybe two. And I honestly loved it. And the main reason was that being on your wrist gives you like a weird feeling of like freedom. It's kind of strange to explain, but the fact that it's honestly on your wrist and the fact that the device becomes personal, it leverages some kind of like notification stress that you'll have with your phone and all that stuff. Because you're safe that it will show on your wrist and all that stuff. And also, a new feature that will be in the Apple Watch that it was kind of okay-ish in the Pebble is better notification management. And that will be awesome. Because you'll be able to specify like who's friend or who's like person you want notification to be sent to the watch. And
well, there's a big asterisk for that, though.
Which is?
It has to be via iMessage, which I don't use because it doesn't work.
Okay, so I'll be the one testing that feature when the Apple Watch gets out.
You can
out.
Get all the notifications to see the messages that you never got that I sent you.
I don't want to jump onto an iMessage conversation with you right now.
Actually, things we are greatly looking forward to in 2015. Maybe iMessage will work. Maybe.
It works. Not every time, but it works.
Okay, so I'm going in skeptical about the usefulness of wearable devices. I think wearable devices are great for checking into Foursquare.
They are for that. I love the Pebble for that.
The Swarm app is great on Pebble. That is about the only thing I do on Pebble, though, when I remember to charge it.
So you're using the Pebble recently?
I tried it for like 2 weeks, and then I forgot to charge it, and I didn't remember about it, and then that's pretty much what happened. Like, I have very limited use for it because I sit at my desk all day and don't leave the house much. Where I would see a great use for it would be, ironically, in Japan, where I won't be able to use it this year because it won't be out, for turn-by-turn navigation, because I think that taptic feedback for navigation is great because it's sort of a pain to always have to look at your phone to navigate.
Yeah, and that taptic feedback is something I really want to try because they are saying that it should not be heard by people around you. And that was one of my main negative points for the Pebble is when it
right,
buzzes,
you can hear it.
It buzzes.
It's kind of hilarious because the Pebble's vibration engine is louder than the iPhone 6's. Like, the iPhone 6 I never hear, which is sort of a problem because I miss a bunch of notifications sometimes. But, like, the Pebble, if I have it activated, I can hear it from across the room.
Yeah, I remember that. And I will say it's the same with the 5S. I miss tons of notifications because I cannot hear it buzz.
Oh, I didn't have an issue with, like, the 5 series, but the 6 in particular. I hear 6 Plus has, like, a crazy-ass vibrator, but...
It does. And it's
But the
funny.
Normal 6 is, like, you can't feel it, basically.
Yeah, and this week we got news related to the Apple Watch.
Yeah.
So we heard that there's rumors saying that the Apple Watch might come out in March.
And right, which is about what I was expecting, honestly.
Yeah, when they say spring, March is kind of spring. But
it's the earliest in spring, though, which is, like, for Apple, usually it's, like, the last day of something is the day that they release it.
Yeah, it's pretty uncommon if the watch gets released in March. But, hey, maybe Apple is trying to set a new trend. When they say a season, it means the beginning of the season and not the end.
I'm skeptical about that. But the interesting thing was, of course, the companion app that Mark Gurman posted screenshots of on 9to5 Mac today.
Yep. And it was found in the iOS 8.2 beta 4 that was released yesterday.
Yeah.
So I put the link in the show notes, so it's pretty a good idea to go look at them. And it like the screenshot shows you how much feature that is still unannounced about the watch. It's not big features, let's be honest, but those features that people were asking questions when they announced the watch without saying what you can do with it exactly. The big one was like music on it. And the companion app will show you how much storage you have on your watch. So
it's going to be interesting to see, like, if there are storage tiers, and if there are storage tiers, like, what those are and how they compare to the iPhone ones and how important it is. Right now, it might be a little bit hard to tell since there aren't truly native apps on the platform. It's mostly WatchKit apps, which are different.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll see if we'll be able to have a full SDK this year.
Yeah.
Because the full SDK will change the game storage-wise. And there's another aspect about that SDK that would be nice, but storage-wise, the way that you'll install apps might be something completely different from now.
Right. So I'm very interested with the Apple Watch, and I can't wait for it to be out, primarily because I'm interested in closely studying the UI patterns, because the UI on Apple Watch fascinates me. But I'm very curious about pricing for the stainless steel model, because the aluminium model looks fine, except I hate the sports bands, so I really want like a band that doesn't look stupid. And in theory, you can mix and match between the aluminium one and the stainless steel band, but then it looks stupid because you have like the shiny stainless steel clasp and the aluminum body, and it looks weird. The same deal with the edition. Like, my favorite band is actually an edition band, but I'm not sure going to pay like $1 billion to get the fancy band.
But I'm sure we'll be able to buy the edition bands with a normal one.
Yeah, but it'll still look stupid because, like, if the clasp is gold, then what are you going to do? Like, it's not going to fit at all.
Yeah, we'll see.
So what's your preference with regards to bands and body? Before we move on to the next topic.
Obviously, it might sound surprising to you, but I honestly don't think I'll buy the edition watch, the edition one. Like, even if I have a gold phone.
No, obviously.
Obviously, like, real gold, it's too cheesy for me. But I'm honestly torn between the sport model and the normal model. And I know that the bands and I don't remember the name of the band that I want, but there's a nice blue one, like jean style in a way, that I really like. But there's two. There's the edition one and there's the normal one. And if I recall correctly, the edition one is the... Oh, let me check. I'm sure I will have time for that.
As for me,
Yeah, go on.
I'm a fan of Midnight Blue with Stainless. That's a good combination. Personally, I prefer the Midnight Blue bend on the edition, but obviously I'm not going to get the Gold Watch, so that's out of the question. If I absolutely have to go with aluminum, which I probably will if the stainless steel is crazy expensive, I'm going to go with a pink sport band because obviously got to rep the pink.
All right, now I see the Midnight Blue in front of me, and that's the like normal blue one, but the one I'm talking about is the Apple Watch, and what's its name? Go on. It's not the classic buckle. It's the later loop, but there's a blue edition.
Yeah.
And that's the one I was talking about.
So that about does it for Apple Watch. Should I go next or should you go next?
I can go next while we're still talking about Apple. So the big thing I'm waiting for 2015 is, like, I might guess that this year will be the year of Apple CarPlay and infotainment system by big companies. So I also include Android Auto. And as you may know, both of them were launched at the beginning of 2014. And a big problem that happened during 2014 is we haven't heard anything about those systems. Like, Android Auto is still missing in action. Like, we're starting to hear a little bit about it. Like, companies are saying there's the Open Automotive Alliance. Like, some like name related to Open Handset Alliance, but for cars. And those news related to CarPlay started to happen a lot beginning of this year, like with CES and a little bit during Christmas. They were, because the beginning of the year is always a big moment for electronics and especially for cars. Why is that? It's this week is the Detroit Auto Show, and it's kind of the biggest one in North America. So we're starting to hear tons of news about what is in the future of CarPlay for this year. And before I jump in the future, I just want to mention that the biggest news in 2014 related to CarPlay was the official launch. That was not in March 2011 when Apple announced it. Is when we saw cars at the Geneva Motor Show with the system. And Mercedes-Benz, Ferrari, and Volvo were the first one to include the system in their car. And also, something interesting is we saw different implementation of the same system. And what I mean is we saw Mercedes-Benz using button and knobs to control CarPlay. We saw Ferrari with old touchscreen systems. And we saw Volvo with the capacitive touchscreens. So
before we move on, I actually have an anecdote to share, and also like a link that is relevant. So the first thing is there's an episode of Neutral about the interface in car user interface, which is phenomenal, and you should listen to it. Actually, you should listen to all of Neutral, because even if you don't care about cars, it's an awesome podcast, which unfortunately hadn't had that much people listen to it. So that should be in the show notes. But what I want to talk about is I have a friend who works in a Japanese car company, and I was with him when the news about CarPlay came out, and I got to hear basically his perspective on it, which was actually pretty interesting, which is car manufacturers aren't very happy about CarPlay and Android Auto. Well, at the time it was just CarPlay, because now basically customer demand is please integrate these systems into your car systems. But they're basically saying, like, we have to put people who are competing with our own user interface on our user interface so that consumers are happy. And they're not very thrilled about that kind of, like, basically it's like giving them an OS chooser when they boot up their car. Like, do you want to boot into Linux, Mac, or Windows? Except it's Android Auto, CarPlay, or whatever the car manufacturer made themselves. And it's going to suck for my friend, but the interfaces on the cars that they make isn't very good. but I don't think that's necessarily the fault of the people who are programming it. I think it's more like a bigger problem, like an institutional problem, that they're not used to being like a software company.
Yeah, and also it's like the first time that real big software companies are focusing on the car. Sorry, Microsoft, by the way. But yeah, so the like here it's Apple and Android, but those two companies that are mostly software focused, even if Apple is making tons of money with hardware, but those two companies are big expertise in software. So they are focusing on the car because they know how to do good UI, good UX. And they know that right now in the automobile industry, UX is bad for infotainment system.
Yeah.
And a big example of that is the different implementation of CarPlay in different cars. Mm. Like, you won't have the same experience if you have a capacitive touchscreen or the resistive one. And so I put in the show notes two links. The first one is related to a demo of CarPlay inside the Ferrari, and the Ferrari uses a resistive touchscreen. And what you mentioned about switching from CarPlay to the Ferrari infotainment system, it is jarring.
Yeah.
Because the Ferrari one is really masculine, or the idea of masculinity by Ferrari. So it's like chrome everywhere, robot everywhere, and all that stuff, and then you press CarPlay, and then it's flat everywhere. Like, it's jarring. It's so funny.
Yeah, well, it's sort of like the skeuomorphic versus flat debate, except it's on the same device. Like, it's a switch you can flip instead of... Well, there's also the fact that CarPlay is probably a better UI anyway, but...
Yeah, of course, but, like, even then, the manufacturer still want to put their option in the car. And they have, honestly, reasons to do that, and economic reasons to do that.
And what's surprising about Android Auto, and I'm personally for this, but is that Google is restricting what you can actually do with regards to Android Auto. Like, you can't, unlike Android itself, car manufacturers can't customize Android Auto at all. It has to be exactly how Google made it, which I'm very happy about, because I said that Google should actually take greater control and say screw all this openness crap on Android itself. Now it's a little too late to do that because they've built their empire that way. But for new stuff like is it called Android TV and Android Auto, they just restrict entirely. And Android Wear, I should point out,
and Chrome OS, they're doing the same with the new version of Chrome OS.
Yeah, it's kind of a little different on Chrome OS, actually,
a little bit, but they are restricting option that they add beforehand to customize the OS.
Yeah.
So yeah, and to conclude on 2014 with CarPlay and Android Auto news, beginning of summer 2014, we also saw the launch of third-party system from Alpine or Pioneer. Except that was the biggest news of 2014 for CarPlay. And we're about 2 weeks in 2015, and I have already tons of news related to CarPlay. It might be related because it's like first week of January's CES, and the second one is the Detroit Auto Show. But even then, last year, we didn't add that much.
Well, last year, the thing was announced in March, right? So it skipped that entire cycle. It was like, well, see you next year cycle.
Yeah,
at
CarPlay
the auto
was
show.
CarPlay was introduced in March, but Android Auto was launched in January. Like the
What? January? It was.
Yes.
Well, maybe they did the first demo at Google I/O, because I swear it was at Google I/O.
I looked on the internet. It said that, but I remember seeing demos at Google I/O. But maybe the problem is that they created the Open Automotive Alliance.
Yeah, I believe they may have name-dropped the product beforehand, but I don't think they've actually like shown anything for it until Google I/O. Like, people knew Android Auto was coming, but they didn't know anything about it. Unlike CarPlay, which had an actual page on, well, it's probably even the same page that they have on the Apple website now, with all the fancy UI screenshots and everything. That was there like the day they announced CarPlay.
Yeah, you're right. Real-time follow-up. The Open Automotive Alliance was created on January 2014. And Enredo was announced on June at Google I.O.
Right, that sounds right.
That's it. So we knew which manufacturer were part of that alliance, but we didn't saw the software and all the Android Auto until Google I.O. So that
right.
might be part...
Because the UI is all material design stuff and they hadn't released pictures of what that looked like, it wouldn't have made sense, right? So.
Yep, you're right. So now let's jump to this year. So in the biggest news, we have more manufacturer. We have more third-party system. Biggest one right now that I saw during CES is the Parrot system, which is Android-based. So it's an Android infotainment system. I think it's even using Android 5.0. And it has both options for CarPlay and Android Auto. This also means that CarPlay is now supported on QNX platforms and Android platforms, which is an interesting move from Apple.
I believe, like, if you exclude products that they've actually, like, acquired over the years, that this would be Apple's first Android code that they would have shipped, which is strange when you think about it.
Yeah, it is. It is. I think... Do we have another example? I don't think so. I think the other example is, like you just said.
Yeah, because I would think like Beats.
Yeah, it's code they have acquired. Yep, so CarPlay is the first code that Apple... Like, finger crossed, that will be the only code that will be on Android, but...
Well, they said they're continuing to support Beats, and they're probably going to be like... I'm actually very curious to see like how that's going to turn out. Like future Beats development, if the rumors are true that they're building it into iTunes, does that mean there's going to be iTunes for Android? Like,
that would be interesting.
And if Apple can't actually like put enough effort into their own iOS software, how bad is it going to be on Android?
Oh my! Have you tried iTunes on Windows recently?
Recently, a couple of months ago.
Is it still bad?
It's worse.
Oh, it's worse?
It's worse.
In which ways? Because it's kind of... It was already bad.
Well, there's a bunch of weird stuff. Like, you can be in the middle of restoring a device in iTunes, and then it will trigger sleep in the middle of the thing, and it won't actually prevent the system from sleeping, and then you have to redo your restore.
Oh, that's nice. And do you know if they are using the new UI?
You mean like the iTunes 12 stuff?
Yeah.
It looks like iTunes 12.
Okay. Now I can get back on track. So like I was saying, it seems that CarPlay is not supported on Android. And by the way, you should look at videos from that, from Parrot. Their system looks really nice for an Android-based system. Like, they have nice UI, nice UX. It seems pretty awesome. Also, a big player that was still silent until this week was Volkswagen. They officially announced that CarPlay, Android Auto, and Mirrorlink will be supported in 2015 in most of their car.
What's Mirrorlink?
Mirrorlink is a technology by somebody, but I forgot. But I think it's from Sony. But it's a protocol to just plug in your phone, and it is a protocol to project the phone interface to another screen.
Okay.
Without any optimization. Like in a way, you can say that about CarPlay and Android Auto, but I think Mirrorlink is just like, here's your phone UI.
Okay. That sounds terrible, but okay.
Yeah. That's why I haven't looked at it. I just knew that it was kind of... Ugh, okay. A little note about that VW news is that we still haven't heard from their Canadian division. So, let's hope for the best. Next big news is the new Chevy Volt will also include CarPlay and Mirrorlink, but no news about Android Auto. So that's starting to be a topic. Like, we know that most manufacturers will implement CarPlay, maybe another technology that they want to push. But it seems to me that right now, Android Auto is kind of not being that much pushed by a manufacturer. And if you go to both page on Apple's website, on the US web's Apple website, and on Android Auto, you'll see that the list of manufacturers is way bigger on the Apple side, which is quite interesting. I would have imagined that Google would have been able to get more deals, contracts with a bigger list of manufacturers than Apple, because we know how Apple loves to work with others. Like, we all know that they are quite difficult to work with others. And in the automotive industry, you need to work with others if you want to do something. So that's, in my opinion, I think that is something, it's already setting the set, is setting the stone for Apple Play in the, Apple CarPlay in the future. Meaning that I think that CarPlay will get in, will be in more cars than other competitive system.
Well, it's like when cars started building iPod cables into, well, not iPod cables, but iPod connectors into their cars, and that there was official iPod support in cars, and pretty much no one ever supported the third-party MP3 players aside from that. Like, if they supported third-party stuff, it was either you put an MP3, USB drive into the dashboard, or you had an aux jack.
Yeah, basically. You had the aux jack. Because if I don't recall correctly, but is there some kind of like protocol to play music via USB? Because like when you plug in a USB stick, it's just reading data.
It's reading the files directly.
Yeah, but I mean, like if you plug like an Android phone, is there a way to say like, here's my media library, or it will be recognized from the radio as a USB stick?
There's probably whatever the... there was a protocol for like MP3 players back in the day. I don't know if Android implements that. I don't remember what it's called either, so I can't really say.
Okay.
The obvious thing is use Bluetooth instead if you can.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, in 2015, Apple and Google will have competition from the existing system or from new system. The best example of that is Ford. Like I mentioned earlier, like Microsoft is still in the car business, but their biggest partnership was with Ford, with the Sync system. And Ford announced with the third installment of Sync that they are dropping the Microsoft platform and is going to QNX like everybody else in the industry, which is quite funny, but a quite blow to Microsoft. Like, they're losing a big partner. Other nice features from the Sync 3 update will be automatic update. So you'll be able to park your car near your home, connect to your Wi-Fi, and the car once a month or twice a month will auto-update itself. Which is pretty interesting, because if you compare with the current way to update the Ford system, the Sync system, it's pretty different. More on that later. Another nice feature will be the support for Siri Eyes Free and third-party navigation apps. So they will be able to go to, for example, if they want to do a Google Maps app or a Nokia Here Maps app, those companies will be able to do it. But like I said a lot this episode, there are still no dates for Android Auto or CarPlay, because they are taking their time to put it in their own system and make sure they still have the control on everything. The other system that got popularized a couple of days ago is from Verizon, strangely enough.
Huh.
Yep, Verizon is launching their own Verizon vehicle, and it's kind of like a do-it-yourself OnStar system or a BMW connected services system.
That sounds like the worst thing ever, though, because it's by Verizon.
Exactly. So you install US style of Bluetooth speaker, and you plug a dongle in your OBD port, and it does like automatic crash detection, give you audio cues if you, the same way that OnStar does it. You can do navigation, audio navigation, and I'm trying to search for a point of interest and that kind of stuff.
But does it have a screen? Because you said it was a Bluetooth speaker.
No. It's kind of weird. There's no screen. It's only via audio. It's connecting to, I guess, the Verizon network to do that. And there's a
obviously.
There's a subscription fee, which is $15 per month for the first car and $13 more per car per month. So it's kind of a strange system. But the main selling point for that system is, like, you can put new technology in your old car, which is a bad
one.
Yeah, exactly. It is a bad one. So that was mostly it related to CarPlay. And as you can see, I'm pretty hyped about those new technologies in car. And we do have tons of stuff I can talk about, like self-driving car, but I don't want to jump in that. And the main reason that I was looking at CarPlay recently is last week I had to update my SYNC system in my Ford car. And that was quite funny. If I go through the process quite rapidly, is you go on the Ford website, you download files, you put them on USB stick, you go in your car for 25 minutes, and you keep the car running, obviously. Yay, nature. And then after 20 to 30 minutes, your car is updated.
And wow.
And then, wait a sec, because now the Ford's website needs to know if the update was okay or not, if it was installed or not. So you take out the USB stick, go back inside, go on your computer, go on the website, and the updater will have created the XML file saying, oh, I'm updated now.
Oh, God.
And you need to upload that file to the Ford website. And then the process is done.
That's pretty terrible.
It is.
At least if it would have been like an Aztec or something, you could have gone camping in the back of the car while you were doing it.
I could do that, but I decided to do that like maybe like a couple of nights ago when it was like minus 20 outside. But I wanted to do it that night. I want it to be done for this episode. So, yeah, it was pretty nice. And obviously, I had to wait outside in the car, parked in front of my apartment. It was pretty funny. Everybody that was walking on the street was looking at me like, what the fuck are you doing in your car? Doing nothing, park and running. But hey, now I have an updated system.
Wow, that sounds like quite an adventure.
Yes. Anywho, I think now we want to go through your list of stuff you're waiting for 2015.
Right, so I have four things, but I'm not going to go into as much detail as you did into CarPlay. I have like two I'm going to go into detail on and two short ones, so I'm going to start with the short one. Tweetbot for iPad. Maybe it'll come in 2015. I really hope it does because there are a bunch of features that are missing in Tweetbot for iPad right now, and as much as I dislike the iOS 7 aesthetic, it still hasn't been updated for the iOS 7 aesthetic, so the inconsistency is bugging me, even though I am not a fan of the new style. Maybe sometime this year it'll come out. I know that things are hard for developers and that it's not right to pressure developers into getting things done very, very quickly. On the other hand, it's sort of due.
Yeah, it is, but like
it's like I feel very bad for the TapBots people who released CalcBot for Mac a couple of months ago, and all the replies on Twitter were, "This isn't TweetBot for iPad. What the fuck are you doing?"
Oh, that day was honestly sad because
CalcBot was really terrible.
Yeah, but CalcBot for Mac was awesome. Like it looked awesome. It was.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's very hard to get excited about a calculator.
Yeah. I agree.
So that's item number one. Item number two APIs designed specifically for Swift. So in 2014 at WWDC, Apple was making miracles happen by dropping a bunch of new stuff for developers all at once. And one of those things was a little programming language called Swift that developers have been spending their months and months learning and hitting their heads against the wall about. There was something very, very obvious from the WWDC slides last year, and that is that nobody outside of the Swift team knew that this was coming, because all of the slides had Objective-C code on them and no Swift code at all aside from the ones by the Swift team. And that's unfortunate because Apple has a lot of really, really good frameworks for developers that have a lot of functionality, but they've all been developed with Objective-C in mind. And or actually, some of them are still in C, like the address book API, which is strangely still only in C, even though a lot of apps would love to use it.
Same for the keychain API.
Yeah, keychain is a mess. Please, guys, fix that.
And if I recall correctly, there's an Objective-C version on the Mac of it. Like, there's an Objective-C API for keychain on the Mac and not on iOS. Same for address book. I might be wrong, but
I'm not sure about that, but yeah. So Swift actually introduces many, many features that developers were very, very happy about because we saw ways in which the existing APIs could be modified to be much, much better. Namely, the obvious thing that everybody throws out because it's the thing that is the biggest pain in the ass to work with is NS error. If you're an Objective-C developer, you know what that means. And if you're not an Objective-C developer, you probably have no idea what I'm talking about anyway. So it shouldn't be a huge deal. But like managing errors in Objective-C, it was okay for a while, but now it's just gotten out of hand. And we would really like to move to a more modern error handling mechanism. And Swift with tuples would actually allow for something much more elegant. And the problem is, right now they're maintaining backwards compatibility. So you can use all Objective-C APIs in Swift, but they are very clearly Objective-C APIs, which have to fit with the limitations of Objective-C. If you were to introduce something like tuple return types for things that may have errors, the tuples don't exist in Objective-C, and therefore you would need separate implementations, which is sort of a pain. Another reason that would really be a really good reason to have Swift native APIs is Swift is a different language from Objective-C. I mean, Swift was clearly designed so that Objective-C APIs wouldn't look out of place while it's in transition, but there are so many new things made possible with Swift that if APIs were made for Swift first, they could provide much more powerful functionality than if we were restricted to the common set of features between Objective-C and Swift. So hopefully, fingers crossed, well, actually, it's sort of a yes, but maybe not wish, because it would also be great if the stuff that Apple released in 2014 would work, period. So maybe they should take the year off and just get that to work before doing anything ambitious again.
Yeah, here we need to insert a hint about my first episode on iOS 8.
Right. So if you want to hear our complaints about iOS 8, you can listen to episode 1, which is a really good episode about us whining about iOS 8. But like, as a developer, my wish, because as a developer, I don't actually have that many complaints about iOS 8. I'm actually fairly happy about what they did with iOS 8. Swift is maybe a little immature, but otherwise, developer side, everything is really great. But on the user side, it's sort of a mess, and they should fix that.
Yeah, it is. You're right. Like, the new feature they added for devs is awesome. Obviously, Swift is a little bit immature right now, but that's normal. It was launched 6 months ago.
Right. And the thing is, like, what's very strange is that Apple, aside from like example code, hasn't actually shipped any examples of what good Swift code should look like. And that is actually like kind of weird, because right now it's all third parties that are finding out like what design patterns work well in Swift and what the idioms should be and how code should be structured. And it's very strange to me that Apple, who really is like obsessed with conventions and all that stuff, doesn't really have any guidance for developers as to what an example of a good Swift framework code would look like. It's all third parties that are basically taking this responsibility for themselves. And that then when Apple will ship Swift native APIs, it might not actually clash with what people think is good Swift code. So it's kind of weird that they've let this happen.
Yeah, you're right. And also, if you want a good example of a Swift library, I would suggest you to take a look at Alamo Fire from
Matt Thompson.
Exactly.
Who also did, what's it called?
AF Networking. Yeah, it's Alamo Fire is kind of AF Networking on Swift.
Well, you know what the AF stands for in AF Networking. It's Alamo Fire.
Exactly.
So, yeah. So, things to look forward to. Next up on my list, do you want to guess? It's something we discussed on the very first episode of Limitless Possibility that no one has heard except us.
Oh, wow. I need to think. Is it the one about... Oh, is it the one about iPads?
No. Okay, it's the 0.5 episode, I guess. So Broadwell MacBook Pros, were supposed to come out like a year ago.
Right, your new computer.
Basically, I've been waiting a year for Broadwell MacBook Pros, and they're still not out because Intel screwed up. And I'm waiting for Broadwell MacBook Pros. So hopefully when I come back in March, there are going to be Broadwell MacBook Pros because this 2011 MacBook Air is starting to be a little old.
Yeah, and how the fuck did I forget about that? Like, before we started, I was talking about my iMac that seems to be a little bit dying. It's not right now because I'm using it to record. But the joke is, every time I see Yannick face-to-face, he's like, when are you getting a new computer? When are you getting a new computer?
The answer is always when the Broadwell MacBook Pros come out, except it's been a year now, so it's sort of due.
And it's been a year of me facepalming myself every time Yannick answered that. But hey, you'll be able to get a new Mac now.
Yeah, and it's probably going to be the MacBook Pro because the MacBook Air rumored thing is just too weird and probably not good for my use case anyway, so... Anyway, moving on to my last point, which is gaming related, and of course it's a weird Japanese thing because it wouldn't be an episode of Leave Me Before if I didn't plug a weird Japanese thing.
Of course.
Let's talk about Yo-Kai Watch.
What?
Yo-Kai Watch.
What's that?
Well, good thing you asked, because it's not out here yet, but it will be in 2015. It's a cultural phenomenon in Japan. It's a Media Mix project by Level 5. So Media Mix, if you're not aware, means multiple media. So it means anime, manga, video game, all that stuff all at once thrown at people so that they buy shit and it works. It's by Level 5.
I don't want to make the bad comparison, but Pokemon is that kind in a way?
We're getting there, yes.
Okay.
So the original game was released in summer 2013 in Japan, but it only really took off once the anime started airing, and it's displaced Pokemon as the big series for kids now. So Pokemon is not the big thing anymore with kids. It's Yo-Kai Watch, and that was all in 2014 where it got really huge. Let me put this in perspective. So the Yo-Kai Watch movie came out second week of December. The movie is the second highest grossing movie opening week in Japanese history.
Wow.
Number one is another 2014 movie. It's Frozen. Oh. But number two is Yo-Kai Watch. So let's talk about game sales now, because this is originally a video game. So they're doing a little like Pokemon for the second game, where they have they released two games in the summer, and then later in the year they released Shinichi, which is the third version, sort of like Gold, Silver, Crystal, if you're familiar with the second generation Pokemon games. So Yo-Kai Watch 2 Shinichi, which is the third installment in the Yo-Kai Watch 2 games, it was the number 5 top selling game in 2014. Now, it was released 2 weeks before the end of the year. Number 5 top selling game, not 3DS game on all platforms in 2014 in Japan.
Wow.
2 million copies.
In 2 weeks.
Yeah, but that's not even all of it. So the number one slot went to Yo-Kai Watch 2 Ganso Honke, which were the two versions that were released during the summer, which sold 3.6 million copies. That's almost 600,000 units more than Pokemon Omega Ruby Alpha Sapphire, which was also released this year. The number six slot is the original Yo-Kai Watch game, obviously, which is a year and a half old now. And it sold 1 million copies this year alone. Well, this year, 2014 alone.
So they're monopolizing the top 10.
Yeah, out of the top 10 games sold in Japan in 2014, there are three of them, which are Yo-Kai Watch games. Which is pretty good. And actually, what's very interesting, I was looking at these stats earlier today. Out of the top 10, 8 of them are 3DS games and 2 of them are Wii U games. And none of them are PlayStation or Xbox.
So this game is targeting Nintendo?
Yeah, it's a 3DS
consoles?
Game.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So it's a really, really great game. It'd be a shame if people who don't speak Japanese never get to play it. And like last weekend, I watched an entire Let's Play of Yo-Kai Watch 1 because I'm planning to buy Yo-Kai Watch 2. So I want to sort of skip Yo-Kai Watch 1 because the 2 is apparently... fixes all of the issues that there were in Yo-Kai Watch 1. So I said, well, might as well watch the playthrough if I'm not going to plan on playing it. And it looks amazing. It makes Pokemon look like baby video games. Like, the complaint you hear a lot about the Pokemon games is that they're too close to the formula of the original games, and, like, they've deviated and added like, cool things like, they added the cosplay Pikachu thing or whatever and Pokemon beauty contests and all that stuff to, like, keep you entertained by playing the game. But those are such minor things. Yo-Kai Watch is insane. Like, the environments, like, you can go into most of the buildings, but, like, in Pokemon, the buildings are pretty much, like, they're, like, three types of rooms and you will probably, like, see all of them in the first two cities. And then they just repeat those same rooms for the rest of the game, except the people are in different places, like, on the couch. Yo-Kai Watch, like, every environment is very, very well designed. You can go into a video game arcade and it looks like a video game arcade. Pokemon is made by Nintendo, and strangely enough, like, none of the game is in 3D. Like, I don't know if you noticed this, but, like, if you play Pokemon on the 3DS, only the battle scenes are in 3D. Like, the environments inside the cities and stuff are completely 2D because apparently they couldn't get the performance. Yo-Kai Watch, like, that not only do the environments look better than they do in the Pokemon game, but they're fully 3D. Like, you're like, how did you do this, level 5? It's insane. And the UI polish is really, really high. The game is fully voiced. Pokemon is not. But actually, no, it's not fully voiced. I take that back.
But just the fact that they are targeting Nintendo consoles is jarring to me. It's like, they are going where the Pokemon market is, and it is on Nintendo on the Nintendo platform.
Yeah, it's very much Pokemon for the new generation. It's the battle system is not like in Pokemon. Like, you still have a team of six creatures, but the interesting thing is you always have three out at a time, and it's on a wheel that you can turn any time during the battle. So you can have like any three, like you can have half of the wheel, any half of the wheel like displayed. And have those monsters attack. You don't choose attacks. They're automatically selected for you, which is strange. Like, you can do a special attack, but that is the only one you actually have any control over. Instead of throwing Pokeballs at monsters to catch them, you actually, like, each character has their favorite kind of food, and you have to give them their favorite kind of food, and then they are more likely to become your friend and part of your party at the end of the encounter. It's very, very... it's like you look at Pokemon after seeing Yo-Kai Watch and you say it's true everything that people have been saying about Pokemon being the same game all the time. It's just that a lot of us, like, we like that formula and it works out well. But Yo-Kai Watch shows you that a game like Pokemon can be so much more. And like, Yo-Kai Watch 2 is even more nuts. Like, I was talking about just Yo-Kai Watch 1 because I've actually seen footage of that and I'm trying not to spoil myself on the second game. But the second game has even more stuff you can do. You can ride the train and get off at every station on the train line along the way if you want. And there are, like, little cities along the way, and you can go there and explore those cities and go into each house and talk to people and do quests there. And it's like, it's nuts that you can do this in a video game. It's like if GTA was for kids, basically, except you can't kill anyone.
Yeah. Okay. GTA for kids? It's like,
Well, I meant more in the sense of it's an open world game. Yeah, I know. Now, the one thing that worries me about this is that it's going to be completely lost in translation, because the yokai in Yokai Watch, yokai are legendary creatures from Japanese mythology, which Japanese people are very familiar with, but I don't know how you translate that into North American people.
I see. Like, I see that with Pokemon, it's kind of easier, because it's like Pokemon's were like...
It's like, yeah, you have a fire dragon.
Yeah, exactly. But also it was a full invention. Like, it was not based on mythology, if I recall correctly.
Right. And the other thing is that Pokemon did this to a certain extent, but all of the names of the creatures in Yokai Watch are Japanese puns. Good luck translating that into English in a way that works. They're probably just going to give up, I guess. So I'm very worried about how the translation and the localization effort is going to be. It's very, very hard to do this, which is probably why the game is coming only like 2 years after it was released in Japan. At the premiere of the Yokai Watch movie, the president of Level 5 said, this is coming to North America. Well, not North America. They said internationally. So what if it only comes out in Italy and not in North America? That would be strange. But
it could be Europe only.
It could be. Well, that also happens a lot for level 5 stuff, right? So Inazuma 11, which is another level 5 franchise, that has come out in Europe the whole time, and it just barely came out this year. The first title came out, which, like, Inazuma 11 1, I believe, was a GBA game, which is really, really strange to have it come out on the 3DS now. In North America.
That's honestly strange. Like, so right. So it's a kind of a remaster of the GBA game on the 3DS?
Yeah, I think they re-released all the Inazuma 11 games on 3DS in Japan a couple of years ago.
Okay.
So it's probably just the translation of that. Sort of like how we got Danganronpa 1 and 2 Vita version here, except they were released split, and we never got the PSP version because we got the remaster instead. I'm really, really looking forward to more people getting to experience Yokai Watch, because it's nuts, and the anime is even more nuts. And I hope it does well for them, because it's a big risk to bring this out here, because it's so Japanese. But on the other hand, it's so good.
Yeah, well, we can say the same thing about Pokemon. Like, don't forget that Pokemon is so Japanese. So 90s Japanese.
I don't know. I mean, like, Pokemon, like, yeah, it has cute creatures and stuff, but the story doesn't depend on knowledge of Japanese mythology, you know?
Yeah.
Or Japanese pop culture.
That might be the biggest problem. But, like, they have the same issues with Pokemon names. Like, I know that they try to do the same catchy name in each language. Like, if you take a look at the Japanese name, the English name, and the French name, like, they all sound catchy related to that Pokemon. And they have the same challenge to do that with each Pokemon. And each new game, they have, like, 150 more Pokemon that you need to translate per language and all that stuff. So, the Japanese mythology and pop culture, like, that part seems to me the same. Like, the rest of it seems to me the same. The same level of difficulty.
Like, the other thing is, I'm worried, like, the shopping malls and stuff have shops in them that are very much something that would only be in Japan. Like, you wouldn't find very many, like, now I'm blanking out on examples, obviously, but let's say restaurant for a very specific Japanese thing that is not available easily in North America. Like, specialty Japanese food that, like, even Japanese restaurants here wouldn't necessarily have. And then to have, like, two of those restaurants next to each other in a shopping mall, you'd be like, what the hell is going on here? It's like, we can't walk down the street. Well, most of us can't just walk down the street and have, like, food trucks for dumplings anywhere. But, like, in the Yo-Kai Watch universe, that's kind of accepted. And, like, yeah, it's sort of like Phoenix Wright, which we also love, they actually managed to pull it off pretty well, where they don't say the story is taking place in Japan. They actually, like, try and make people believe that it takes place somewhere in America, and it more or less pulls it off, except for the parts where, like, Maya's family is involved.
Yeah, except that,
like,
part.
that's sort of the hint that this is a localized game, but everything else sort of works. Yo-Kai Watch just has so much more of that stuff, because the entire game is based on the premise that you're familiar with Japanese mythology. It's weird. That said, it's adorable, and everybody should buy it when it comes out. And I absolutely cannot wait until next week when I'm in Japan, so I can... The first thing I'm planning to do is actually buy a Yo-Kai Watch 2, like, before I even go to check in.
Oh, come on. Oh. So, yeah, so finger crossed. Let's hope it comes here, and they find a good way to bring it here without sacrificing all of that stuff.
It's so good, man. So that does it for my list, I believe. Yeah.
Do you have any TVs, movies, video game you want to add on that list? Because I don't have any right now. The problem is I haven't, like, at every beginning of the year, I go on the internet and take a look at Wikipedia launch list of video games for 2015. And go,
yeah,
like, look at what's coming. And this year, I haven't had the time because I'm, right now, as you can see, I'm focused on car stuff.
Well, let me go through my list of stuff. Like, I have a wish list for 2015 games, and it's probably very, very, very long, so I'm not going to read all of them.
Yeah, you can skim through it.
And, of course, the majority of these are Japanese games because some of my consoles are Japanese consoles, so I can't play stuff. Theatrhythm Dragon Quest, which is a music game based on the music of the Dragon Quest RPGs. That's coming out in March 2015 in Japan, which is going to be pretty good. New 3DS owners, which right now are only in Japan, Australia, and certain parts of Europe, will get to play Xenoblade sometime this year, which is a 67-hour RPG that was originally released on the Wii, and because it was released on the Wii, nobody ever got to play it, so they're releasing it on new 3DS so that people can play it this time.
Speaking of the new 3DS, rumor says that it should be in North America in March.
February.
Nice.
February 13th.
Really? Oh, okay.
That's what's rumored, and probably by the time that people listen to this, the Nintendo Direct that is due tomorrow will have happened, and they will have announced this officially, but who knows?
Who knows, indeed.
The strange thing about the rumors that you've seen is that the poster only talks about the XL. It does not talk about the smaller model, which is the one that I have. So it would be odd if they only brought the XL out in North America.
And if I recall correctly, the XL is the one without faceplates.
That's correct.
Ah. And it kind of pisses me off a little bit because I bought my 3DS 4 months ago.
Well, that's what's going to be interesting about the Nintendo Direct tomorrow. I hope they announce more new Nintendo 3DS exclusive titles. And that's not just like to piss people off who have the original 3DS, but as a new Nintendo 3DS owner, I have a hard time justifying the console to lots of people. I mostly bought one because mine was dead, basically. I had to get a new 3DS if I wanted to keep playing my games, so I got the new one because why not? But if you don't play games that use the second thumbstick, I have a very hard time recommending it to anyone. Unless it's the same price going forward, but like to upgrade, like the big incentive to upgrade right now is if you play with 3D on a lot, the 3D on the new 3DS is way, 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 way better because it does the eye tracking thing and it really, really makes a huge difference. But otherwise, if you don't play with 3D on, like, there's no reason to upgrade really, because unless you play a lot of Monster Hunter, I guess.
And do you see a difference in speed? Because they say that it is a little bit more powerful compared to the current one.
When exiting to the home screen and when using the eShop, there is a huge difference in speed. But in-game, the games don't actually change unless they were specially designed for the new 3DS. So I have Smash, and I played it on both consoles, and Smash loads in 17 seconds on the new 3DS, which is a lot less time than it would take on my previous 3DS XL. But like games that weren't designed for the new 3DS have the same loading speed as always, and there's no real speed difference there.
Okay.
Going through my game list, let's see. Actually, I have a lot of Wii U games this year on my list, which is strange because I don't have a Wii U. let's see. PlayStation 4. So Amplitude is coming out this year. Amplitude, you may have seen the Kickstarter for that in 2014. It's the follow-up to the Frequency and Amplitude games that Harmonix made on the PS2. They are bringing back that series on PS4 and PS3, and I backed that on Kickstarter, so I'm going to be getting that sometime in March, which is going to be great.
So it will be on Sony platforms only?
Well, it's a Sony IP. They couldn't actually make it for other platforms if they wanted to.
Oh, right. Okay.
It's like Harmonix develops, but Sony publishes, yeah. So. Let's see. There are somehow still PSP games coming out, but none of them are on my list. Let's see. Okay, so I was talking about this with a friend yesterday because it's research for something I'm working on. Hotful Boyfriend, which, have you heard of this game?
Nope.
Okay. This is going to blow your mind if you're not familiar with it. It's a dating sim, but the twist is, well, A, you play a girl, so it's an otome game, not a gyaruge, if you're familiar with that terminology. But also, everyone is a pigeon.
Let me guess. One is you're a girl trying to date men, and the other one is you're a guy trying to date girls?
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
So, Hotful Boyfriend, the hato in that is Japanese for pigeon, and that's because everybody in the game is a pigeon. It is a dating sim where you go to school with other pigeons and date pigeons and sleep with pigeons.
A female pigeon, and yes. You're trying to date male pigeon?
You're trying to seduce the hot pigeon teacher. Good silence.
Yeah. Anyway,
that's coming out on Vita and PS4 this year.
Wow, a Vita game. Yay!
Yeah, and I am actually very much looking forward to playing this game.
Oh, come on. Why is that?
Because it's actually very hilarious. The writing is very, very good.
Okay.
And like they are very much aware that it's an absurd thing, but that's what makes it great.
Okay, so they honestly are not serious about it. It's kind of a comedy game also.
Well, it's sort of funny when they try to be serious with it.
Okay.
But my experience about this is limited. I do know someone who worked on the translation for it, and they did a really great job from what I've seen of it, and I'm going to need to play it. So there you go. Another game coming out this year on Vita, IAVT Colorful. It's a music game based on the Vocaloid IA, which is, in my opinion, the only one worth caring about. Sorry, everybody. That is a very controversial opinion. Sometime this month, La Mulana EX is coming out on Vita in North America. It's already out in Japan. That is a very popular platforming game for the Vita, which I'm greatly looking forward to. Mighty Number 9, which is the follow-up to the Mega Man series, basically, by the Mega Man creator, except he's not allowed to call it Mega Man, so it's called Mighty Number 9. That is coming out in April. Let's see. Shovel Knight is coming out on PS Vita in 2015, which I'm happy about because I don't want to buy games on 3DS because 3DS digital downloads are a pain.
Yeah. It said that the Phoenix Wright 5 was digital only here in North America.
Yeah. Let's see. Splatoon coming out on Wii U this year. This is probably going to be my game of the year, and I don't even have a Wii U. It's a multiplayer third-person shooter where you play Squid, and everybody knows that I'm a huge fan of Squids. So.
Yeah, but I heard of it. Like, Tony wants to buy that game when it comes out.
It's insane.
Like,
yeah.
Every time he talks to me about that game, he's like, that game is genius.
It is. It's, I don't know. Everybody I know is super excited for Splatoon, and I desperately hope it doesn't suck. But again, it's a Nintendo game, so it probably won't.
Yeah, exactly.
Also on Wii U, first half of the year, actually, I think this comes out like next month, Kirby and the Rainbow Curse, which is the follow-up to Kirby Canvas Curse, which was a very popular game on the original DS back in the early 2000s. That's about it on my wish list for this year, actually. Yeah.
That's pretty of a long list, but that's good.
There are a lot of like retro games on my list, so that's why.
And it's a good week this week to buy retro games, because there's a lot of there's a good sale from the PlayStation Store.
Yeah, 60 games from the 20 past years of PlayStation. It's the 20th anniversary sale, basically.
Exactly.
I can't believe I bought Final Fantasy IV like 2 weeks ago, because now it's $9.99. It's half price. Oh. But oh well.
Yeah, oh well.
Yeah, let's see. TV, movies. I don't watch movies. TV, I don't really watch TV. I watch anime. But anime this year doesn't look so great so far.
But you're not planning to watch The Interview?
Definitely not. Actually, Madman is starting up soon again. They're finalizing the last few episodes of the last season, and I haven't watched previous season because it's sort of those like the final season, and then it's final season part A, final season part B, spread across 2 years, and I'm like, why do you do this to me? So I'm planning to just watch them all in one go. So that's coming up soon. I'm excited about that. But once that is done, I don't have any Western TV I care about anymore.
Yeah.
Which is sad.
I think for me, 2015 will be the... I want it to be the year of I complete stuff that I should have completed a while ago. For example, during Christmas, I watch most of the Star Wars.
Yeah.
And I need to watch the last one in the coming weeks.
So the last one in which order?
Okay.
So you're watching episode 3?
No, episode 6.
Okay, right. Yeah, I remember now.
The last one in the numerical order? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to finding out like what a bunch of our software developer people in the iOS community are going to be doing. Like I know Panic is working on a bunch of things like Diet Coda 2 and stuff, and I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, Diet Coda 2 and Status Board 2.
Yeah, I'm less excited about Status Board because I just don't use it.
Yeah, I don't use it either, but...
And especially now with, like, Notification Center widgets, the reasons to use it have gotten much, much lower.
Yeah, but it's... It is... I can park that app in the general of apps that I want to do something with that.
But I don't know what to do.
I don't have any idea to do something.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I'm also looking forward to the next episodes of our show, which we're going to be doing when I get back from Japan.
Nice transition. Yes. So, as we said and teased for a couple of episodes, this is our last episode for a couple of weeks. Because Mr. Yannick is going to Japan for 6 weeks.
Yeah, a month and a half.
Yeah, 6 weeks. So, yeah. We decided to call it season 1.
Yeah.
So we have 7 episodes, and yep, so that's the last episode of season 1.
But don't worry, there are probably going to be little treats in the feed while we're out. We have some never before heard episodes which are not that great, but whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
You'll be able to listen to those. And hopefully, if everything goes well, we'll be able to record a special episode with me live from Japan with a secret topic.
Yep. I think Yannick has an idea, if I recall correctly. But
oh, yeah.
Let's keep it secret. So we'll try our best to book time, even with that
big time zone difference.
Yeah, big time zone problem, but I'm sure we'll be able to find some time to record an episode and speak about your secret topic.
Yes. And I'm going to be back first week of March. I'm not going to promise that we're going to be back directly the week I come back because there's stuff to be done, but we are going to be talking at least about recording an episode within the weeks after I get back.
Yeah, it would be pretty nice to have an episode in March, but we won't promise anything.
Oh, we're definitely going to be able to have one in March because I get back on the 4th, right? But okay. It's not going to be the week I come back, probably.
The way I remembered it was you came back like in mid-March. I was like, it can be a bit short in time, but okay, if it's 4th of March, it should be fine.
Yeah.
And so on that note.
Yeah, I guess we'll see you on the next episode, whenever that is.
And if our listeners want to find our show notes, they are at limitlesspossibility.net/6.
7.
Oh, right.
This is episode 7.
You're right. Somebody had to do that kind of mistakes, and I did. So, ta-da!
Yeah. If you want to follow us on Twitter, the show is available at limipo_podcast. That's LIMIPO_podcast. I am at Sakurina. That's SAKURINA.
And I'm at Lukonouche, LUCCONOUCHE.
And we'll see you next time.
We'll see you next time.